Hello, everyone, and welcome to another race recap analysis here on the Cycling Dane Extra Channel or on the podcast if you're listening. Today, I'm joined by Patrick of Aldo Cycling, or more importantly, one third of the Echelon Cycling podcast. And yeah, Patrick, we were on stream watching Amstel Gold Race 2023. Turned into a bit of a predictable one, didn't it?
Yeah, everyone was sort of expecting Pogacar to sort of just ride away from everyone. And well, a lot of people turned out to be very correct, because that's precisely what happened. A move went up the road before really we even had a chance to look at it on our streaming platforms. And then there was a move containing Pogacar and Pidcock and a couple of others, including Andreas Klon, Lutsenko. And this move proceeded to kind of roll through and ride together until a first attack, which came from Tadej Pogacar up the Kalberg. And then that shed the group a little bit, made it a little bit smaller. And then it was Pogacar's real final blow. It brought Pidcock and Ben Healy with him into a group of three. And then just a final nail in the coffin, Pogacar rode away from both of these riders on just, I can't remember which climb it was, but he just rode away from them and then went and soloed to victory. And probably from about, I think it was about 28 kilometers to go or so, but he soloed away to victory. And that's exactly what happened. And then it was Ben Healy and Tom Pidcock who were rounding out the podium.
Pidcock almost missing out on the podium there as well. We also had that very devastating crash for the peloton as well that really shook it up and split into two. But I mean, extraordinary performance from Tadej Pogacar. We think between the two of us that it's the first time a rider has won Paris-Nice, Ronde van Vlaanderen and Amstel Gold in the same year, making his own achievements. He's not even emulating Eddie Merckx anymore.
Yeah, he's, like we said on stream, he's just, we're living in a Pogacar world. That's basically what's happening now. He is setting his own achievements. It's almost, yeah, there's been comparisons between Pogacar and Merckx, and, you know, he is very much one of the best, if not the best rider in the pro peloton right now. I mean, these things kind of change depending on who's doing well, but right now I think it's very easy to say that Pogacar is the best rider in the peloton. I reckon that's not entirely the most hot take in the world though.
Yeah, he wasn't deterred by the conditions, but I mean, we'll get onto the controversial part in a minute, which wasn't his fault, let's just be clear. But I mean, that move that he got up the road, more than 80 kilometers to go, Jumbo Visma didn't have, they had Tosh van der Sander up there. Ineos was probably the best team in terms of putting Pidcock up with Magnus Sheffield, but everyone else just kind of, you've never really seen this before, that you let the big time favorite that everyone knows about up in a group like this, in a classic, like crazy.
Yeah, and we both thought on stream that the move should have been closed down sooner when people realized that Pogacar was up there. But there was a surprising amount of laissez-faire kind of in the peloton that the favorite of Pogacar was in this move 30 seconds up the road, that he's got a head start on you. But nobody seemed particularly urged to try and bring it back all of a sudden. They were quite happy to leave it. It was then around 30 seconds. Bahrain committed and got it down to about 20 seconds or so. But then that crash wiped out a lot of the peloton, and all of a sudden there weren't that many domestiques left to chase, which then meant that in the peloton behind, favourites were attacking to try and bridge across. And then domestiques just kept dwindling away until it was just a group of favourites chasing a group of favourites. And then it wasn't actually, they weren't making that many inroads anymore at that point, which meant that all of a sudden Pogacar was basically just solo against just everybody else behind. So I feel like the move probably should have tried to been shut down earlier, but in the wet conditions, maybe he had an extra layer like on over his number or something. Maybe it wasn't entirely obvious that it was Pogacar. Maybe he was just doing a really good at stealthing around the back of a group and nobody really knew. But I think once people knew, I thought there would have been more urgency to try and bring Pogacar back for sure, but that's not really something which we saw, which was surprising.
So, I mean, Ben Healy, we can't not talk about him. First Irishman since 1980s to finish on the podium. And what an incredible ride for him. He finished on the podium midweek. He's had a really good season. And yeah, what did you make of that ride? We were all looking towards Nilsson Palos. Obviously, he was caught up in the crash, but What a ride from him. Even dropping Pidcock.
Yeah. I'm definitely the underdog of the day for sure. Like Healy, sure, there were expectations perhaps that he might do something in this race considering his recent good run of form. But I think that finishing in second place in this race was something which not a lot of people were expecting, especially when you consider that there were other riders like Pidcock Cousnefroid, Benoit, Bagioli, etc., etc. So many other riders who people were favouring to finish on the podium. Ben Healy did an absolutely extraordinary ride. Somehow not entirely surprising considering his good run of form, but he still had to execute it. And I think that EF will be incredibly happy considering that Paulus was caught up in that crash. I think Ben Healy definitely kind of picked up the pieces and finishing in second place, they will be incredibly happy with their youngster to be doing such a great job.
Yeah, completely. Well, as a Dane, I'm very happy that we had three Danes up there as well. Andreas Korn, Alexander Kamp, and Mathias Skjelmose Jensen. And, well, I mean, Lotto Destiny had Korn and another rider as well. They must be over the moon here, the Pro Continental team.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially considering in the wake of last year, where a lot of people were focusing on the UCI point system and the relegation battle. That's certainly something which is more prominent in people's minds going into the next 3-year cycle, which we are in the first year of now. And I think that Lotto Destiny showing that they managed to get two riders inside the top 10, and I think they were the only team that were able to do that. That's a good haul of UCI points, and if we were in last year, people would be all over that saying, well, look at them, the number of UCI points which they got. And you know, UCI points that you gain in the first year are just as equal as the UCI points that you get in the last year of the cycle. So it's incredibly important for Lotto, considering that I presume they have aims of wanting to get back into the World Tour. A good result from today was surely an incredible show of strength from a team, and you know, almost showing that they didn't deserve to be relegated. It was almost a bit of like a, but I'll stick it to you, everyone else. I think it was a really good performance from them.
Yeah, I mean, we might as well get to a bit of the elephant in the room. And yeah, that was that we were talking about it on stream, and many people were going for Tadej Pogačar's head, which was, it's not his fault. But what happened in the race was there was a lot of drafting going on from the lead car to Tadej Pogačar when Ben Healy looked like he was closing the gap. And it's not Tadej Pogačar's fault, obviously. He can't really do anything about it. He's caught in this situation. He's trying to win the race. But yeah, it's just terrible, really, to have this influence of someone who's supposed to be organizing, yeah, the race. And then you have the car, because we were talking about that as well. Like, having a car in front of you is punching a hole through the air, it's making it easier. And I think it's 60, 70 meters is before you don't get an effect of it. So it was definitely getting an effect. And when they cut back to Ben Healy, there was no one in front of him, obviously. So yeah, what did you make of that?
I remember when it happened on stream, and the car was not even at the range that you were just talking about, 60, 70 meters. It was 10 meters, maybe, would you say? It was a really, it was quite close. They came alongside Pogačar, said something to him out the window or something, and then they just kind of like slotted in front of him and didn't, like, they needed to speed off, but they just lingered around too much in front of Pogačar in a range where he was going to be getting an aero benefit from that versus Ben Healy, who wasn't getting anything. And although people could definitely say, well, at that point, let's face it, Pogačar was almost like a shoo-in to win the race at that point, wasn't he? Like, we even said, if Healy gets back, Healy's not winning the sprint. But the point remains, that car shouldn't have been that close to Pogačar, and it could have influenced the race. You know, maybe it doesn't influence the race today like as much, but there are other occasions in other races where perhaps it will.
Yeah, I agree.
Like 2019 under 23 world champs.
Yeah, it was a bit annoying to see, but I mean, what can you say? But anyways, leaving it on a bit of a open-ended part of it, make sure to let us know down below what you think. Should Tadej Pogačar have been disqualified? I think that would be a bit unfair. I think rather the commissaire needs to give an apology for silly, yeah, and the UCI should probably step in as well. But yeah, with that, make sure to let us know your opinion down below. Like the channel, subscribe as well. And of course, as always, we'll see you in the next one.